Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now tuned to the Sitting in the Park show. Today will be a special show because in the studio right now I have Ray Foreman, who sang in the group The Visitors. You want to say hi, Ray?
Hello, everybody.
The Visitors did that song Until You Came Along, which was their biggest hit, which I'm sure everybody knows that record, remembers that record. And Ray sang on a bunch of records and sang backup for a bunch of other artists and wrote for other artists, too. So today we'll be talking about the story of The Visitors and all the other stuff that The Visitors and Ray did. So first of all, thanks so much for coming down here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay. So unlike all the other groups that I've interviewed so far, the Visitors, that you guys, I guess you count as a Chicago group because you were living in Chicago and recording in Chicago, but you guys are originally from another city, right?
That's
so
right.
What's the story? Where are the Visitors from, and where did you form, and sort of when did you form?
Actually, we formed in Kansas City, Missouri, around the latter part of 1963, early part of 1964, when we came out of high school.
Okay, so, and were you saying, you pretty much were the standard story, I guess, that everybody was harmonizing in school? I mean, is that
we
pretty much your story?
We were actually harmonizing in the bathrooms and on the corner.
Okay.
It actually happened like that.
So, I guess I don't know much about the scene in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, were there other groups around at the time from Kansas City already?
Absolutely. Actually, some pretty famous groups. The Sincere's, who became Bloodstone.
Okay.
The Corvairs, they became the Carpets.
Okay.
There was a group also called Thomas Gatson and the Derbies, and the drummer, you're pretty familiar with him, he ended up with the Watson and Third Street Rhythm Band.
James Gatson.
James Gatson.
Okay, so, yeah, I never knew before telling you that he was originally from Kansas City.
Yeah,
I thought he was from L.A. because of the Charles Wright thing.
No, he's from Kansas
City. So were those groups around before you guys started?
No, we all started about the same time.
So what inspired you guys to sing? Was it Motown? Were there specific artists from there? Like, what got you guys started?
It actually was not Motown or any of that. Kansas City then was a hotbed for blues and jazz. And we all live pretty close to 12th Street and Vine.
Okay. So, but blues and jazz was a little bit different than sort of the vocal harmonizing that you guys were doing.
True.
So what kind of inspired you to do that?
Well, there were a lot of shows that came through Kansas City, the Miracles, the Temptations, and people like that. And they were our idols like they were everybody's idols. Not only them, but the Artistics, the Shylights in the early days.
Okay. So you said it was around 63 that you the group formed.
Latter 63, early 64.
And it didn't form while you were in high school?
No, we were actually out of high school when it formed.
Okay, so you weren't a high school group then?
No.
But you had sort of just sang around with people in high school. So what was the original lineup of the group?
The original lineup was me, Ray Foreman, Daryl Penrice, Wilbert Taylor, and Eugene Smiley.
Okay, so what was that? That's four people were in the group. And then did you guys all know each other from high school?
No, myself, Daryl, and Wilbur, yes, but Eugene Smiley didn't go to the same school. Matter of fact, he came from Arkansas or Mississippi, one of those. He had just moved to Kansas City when we met.
Oh, okay. So what school did you guys come from?
I went to Manual. Daryl went to a Catholic school called De La Salle, and Wilbur went to Lincoln.
Okay. So you weren't all from the same school then?
No.
So then how did you guys all know each other?
We lived in the same neighborhood.
Okay, and Eugene Smiley moved into your neighborhood
too.
So did you originally have a name, and what did you do? Did you just kind of harmonize in the street, or what did you guys do?
We actually started harmonizing, and one day we were trying to come up with the name of a group, and we were walking through the grocery store.
Okay.
And I saw some Del Monte peaches.
Okay.
And I said, that's a pretty cool name, so let's name ourselves the Del Montes. So that was our name.
So at the time you were a group of guys called the Del Montes, and you were singing, but you hadn't recorded or anything like that. Were you doing talent shows, or what types of things were you doing?
We did battles of the groups and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then Thomas Gatson picked us up, and we started to travel with them around the country.
Okay, so you were traveling with the Derbies?
Right.
Okay.
It was called Thomas Gatson and the Derbies with James Gatson on drums.
So it was like the Derby's review, and you were part
exactly.
of the review.
Marvel Whitney. It was a lot of people on there.
Now, that's interesting. Who else do you remember? Any other people?
Marvel Whitney.
So that was Marvel before she was
before
with James Brown.
Okay. Absolutely, before James Brown. There was a few people that you probably wouldn't know, but that's basically who it was.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you were part of this touring review,
mm-hmm.
and this was all after you were in high school, and you were called the Del Montes at the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, it was the Del Montes.
So how long did you guys do that for?
Actually, from early 64 till about 60, latter 66.
Okay.
Because that's when James Gatson left to go to California.
Okay.
We started thinking about making a move to go somewhere because we went to Detroit first before we came to Chicago.
Okay.
And we auditioned for Choker Campbell.
Okay.
Who had broke away from Motown.
Yeah, he had a label called Tri-City or something
exactly.
like that at the time.
Golden World.
Oh, okay.
He had a label called Golden World. And what actually happened, we were signed to Golden World. And we went back home all happy. And 2 weeks later, they called us and told us there no longer was a label called Golden World. So that was the end of that one.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's yeah. crazy you were signed to Golden World and you were supposed to be our artist there.
We were actually going to record in about a month.
Okay.
But the next call we got was there was no more Golden World.
Okay. So were you in Detroit? You were in Detroit at the time? And that was around 66?
Yeah, we actually just went to Detroit to okay. try out because we had heard that, because see, Choker Campbell used to be the musical director for the Motown Review.
Yeah.
Well, when he broke away from that, he formed his own label, which was called Golden World, and he said he was looking for artists. So artists from all over the country came to audition.
Yeah, the Holidays were on that label,
yeah.
and Pat Lewis. And
yeah.
Okay. So then what happened after that? Did you guys come to Chicago immediately after
Well,
that?
Actually, we went back home. We were a little depressed after that. It was like, oh, man, I thought that was it. And I had the bright idea of coming to Chicago.
Okay.
So we put our funds together. And actually came to Chicago on very little money. We moved into the YMCA, which was about, that was 8th and Wabash. So that was about 10 blocks away from Brunswick where we ended up. We actually auditioned for 3 record companies.
Okay.
They all accepted us, but we didn't find out that the other 2 accepted us until we were signed to Brunswick.
So
what did do any good.
Do you remember the other 2 companies you auditioned for?
I don't remember. I remember the owner of the other label was Leo Astell.
Okay.
I forgot the name of the company.
It wasn't VJ, was it?
No, VJ was. Yes, it was VJ.
Okay.
It was VJ, and then we auditioned for Chess.
Okay.
And they accepted us, but we found out after we had signed with Brunswick.
Okay. So what's the deal with the Brunswick audition? You just kind of, you always hear stories about, you know, you could just knock on the record label's door and just get an audition. Was it like that?
It was kind of like that. Actually, what happened, we came to Brunswick, we went upstairs, knocked on the door, and the lady that came to the door, she asked us what we wanted. We said, well, we want to audition. And she had Willie Henderson come to the door, and we actually auditioned a cappella right there and was signed that day in the hallway.
That's funny. Do you remember what you sang?
A song called Here We Go to Paris. It was the dumbest song you've ever heard.
So you sang an original all a cappella from Willie Henderson and he just
signed
you.
It was terribly original.
Okay.
Painfully.
So do you remember what year that was?
Yeah. Oh, very clearly. Latter part of 67, early part of 68.
So there was about a year in between the Detroit thing that you came to mm-hmm. Chicago. So you were just kind of hanging out in Kansas City around that
yeah,
time?
Yeah, trying to get it together, saving our money, still doing local stuff, you know, clubs around Kansas City and around the Missouri area. You know, we even went as far, actually, before we got signed, we actually came all the way to New York, and we did a background gig with Betty Everett
okay.
at the Apollo.
Okay.
Because we had did the record There'll Come a Time with her.
But you did that later after you got signed,
yeah.
which we'll talk about
yeah.
the all the back-end work you guys did. So when you got signed, did you record right away at Brunswick?
It took about 4 months.
Okay.
About 4 months. It was actually very fast. We were shocked.
Okay, so at the time you were all living at the Y.
Boy, were we living at the Y.
and but you must have been excited to finally get a deal that looked like it would come through.
You don't understand. Everybody was calling home. We had long distance bills like you wouldn't believe. Our families was like, "Wow, you're gonna be stars." So that we were all on that trip. It was beautiful.
So the first record you cut became a hit, at least in Chicago. It was called Until You Came Along.
Until You Came Along.
And so was that the first thing you recorded, pretty much?
That was the first thing we recorded here. We did some local stuff in Kansas City that stayed very local.
So you never released anything there. So then you were originally called the Del Monte's. Mm-hmm. When did you become the Visitors?
Actually, how that happened, after we did the audition for Willie Henderson, he said, "We need a name for you guys." He said, "Because I'm not feeling you being a can of peaches."
Okay.
I was like, "Oh, wow." He said, "I got it." I said, "Oh, here come this great creative genius." And he said, "You're the Visitors." I said, "Why is that?" "Because you're visiting." I said, "Okay. It works for me, whatever. If that's going to get us recorded, we're going with it."
Okay, so, and do you remember who wrote Until You Came Along?
I sure do.
Okay.
It was Willie Henderson and a guy named Floyd Davis. Not Floyd Davis, I'm sorry.
Floyd Morris?
Not Floyd Morris.
Floyd Smith?
Floyd Smith.
Okay.
Very good.
So the record, and before I play the record, just can you say who's singing lead on this record?
Who's singing lead on it now?
Until You Came Along.
Eugene Smiley.
Okay, well, I'll play the record so people know what we're talking about, and we will come back.
Yeah, we're not going to get tricky, even though there was two Until You Came Along.
Are you saying you recorded? Well, we'll talk about it when we come back. Mm-hmm. So this is the Visitors with their first record and their biggest hit with Until You Came Along. Okay, you're tuned to WHBK, 88.5 FM, Chicago. That was just the Visitors with their biggest hit, Until You Came Along. And if you're just tuning in, I have in the studio right now Ray Foreman of the Visitors, who sings on that record. So that record came out, was it 68 or 69?
Latter 68.
Okay, and that was a hit in Chicago, right?
It was a hit in a lot of places.
Okay.
Actually, we didn't find out till years later how much the record actually sold. When I would go on tour with other groups in England and talk to DJs in England, they would say, "Man, that was a great record. It did great over here."
Yeah, you know, in England they have something called Northern Soul where they play records in clubs.
Yeah,
you know?
You're absolutely
so
right.
So they like playing dance like in Chicago where we might like the ballad records, but mm-hmm. there they play the up tempo dance side.
They sure do.
So I hear that in England the other side of that record, the I'm in Danger side, is the one
was
that got
very
played
big
because
over there.
Because that's the one that's up tempo mm-hmm. that they like. So which I'll play the flip of the record's really good too, which I'll play if we have time. But on that record again, the lineup was Eugene Smiley lead, Ray Foreman, Daryl Penrice,
and Wilbur Taylor.
Okay, so you cut one more record for Dakar Records. And actually, one thing that's interesting is the Until You Came Along, it came out on two labels, right? Like, it came out on a label called Bashy, which mm-hmm. Was like a subsidiary of Brunswick, which like Johnny Williams and a few other artists were on.
Exactly.
And then they re-released it on Dakar.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know what the story with that is, do
well,
you?
Well, they were both Carl Davis on labels.
Okay.
So I think he was trying to build Bashy up.
Okay.
You know, and with the Johnny Williams record, and then they put our record over there.
Okay.
And we really didn't care. We just wanted to play wherever.
And did you have a manager at the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
At that time, it was Carl Davis.
So he became your manager?
Yeah, at that time.
Okay. And you said something about that you actually cut multiple versions mm-hmm. of Until You Came Along. Like, what's the mm-hmm. story with that?
Well, after Eugene Smiley left.
So he left the group soon after?
Yeah, he went back to Kansas City.
Okay.
Probably because he had a family even at that time. He was a little older than the rest of us.
And he cut a couple records in the late 70s. He had a group called The Essence of Love Kansas City.
Good group.
But he left the group almost immediately after Until
Very
You Came Along?
Very close to immediately because I don't think he was on, no, he wasn't on the next record.
Okay, so Eugene Smiley, he just wanted to go back to his family or wanted to become a solo artist?
Probably a little bit of both.
Okay.
And it's hard to say what somebody's thinking, so.
Okay.
You know, because we're still good friends. Don't get me, Eugene. It's cool.
Okay. So he left the group, and then did you find a replacement, like someone else joined the
group?
Yeah.
Actually, we brought in a guy named James... I can't remember James' name. It's been so long. This is terrible. But we're talking 40-some years ago, okay? Give me a break.
Okay. Maybe later in the interview you remember if you
know. No, I know his name, but it'll come to me.
Okay, so someone named James replaced replaced Eugene Smiley, who left to go back to Kansas City.
Yeah.
And how did you know him? Was he from Kansas City, too, or you knew him
Another
in Chicago?
Another guy from Kansas City. He was a guy. It's funny. When you're out there singing and doing engagements, you always have people that always look at you and say, I can do what he's doing.
Okay.
So when Smiley left, here he comes. I can do that. So we actually took on a bass singer. But immediately after he left, we didn't put anybody in the group. It was just
three members
for just a minute. And they wanted that full sound. We could do it.
Okay.
But we wanted it on stage too.
Okay. So at the time you cut Until You Came Along, mm-hmm. were you starting, did you do more shows because you were on Brunswick?
Yeah, we did a lot of shows. We did a lot of traveling because the record was working good. We did most of the Chitling stuff, circuit stuff.
Was it part of a Brunswick review? Or
Absolutely.
Just, okay.
Absolutely. It was a Soul Spectacular.
Okay, so who were the other Brunswick artists on the review?
On that particular tour, it was Barbara Acklin, the Shy Lights, the Artistics, oh, God, Johnny Williams, Johnny Moore, Tyrone Davis in the early days, before the hits.
Okay.
So it was quite a, it must have been 13, 14 different acts.
Okay, so you toured off of that record.
We toured.
And, yeah, that's cool that you finally were getting some start on this.
Yeah. we did Apollo. We did Baltimore. We did the basic Chitling circuit.
Okay. And then you ended up eventually cutting the second record on Brunswick called mm-hmm. I know it didn't get much player promotion, but it's an excellent cut. Like, I really like this record. I play it on my show sometimes. I play the other one too, but this one I like the harmony on this one a lot.
Actually, we were what people they thought that we had one lead singer. It was never like that.
Okay.
It was always a group that everybody sang lead.
Okay.
Actually, when we started the group, I was the lead singer.
Okay, but you all switched off on whatever parts you're strongest
on. Absolutely.
So did Eugene sing lead on I'm in Danger, or was that you?
That was me.
Okay, and then on I'm going to Stay, who sings lead?
That was me again.
So you didn't cut the I'm going to Stay at the same time as I'm in Danger. Was it like 6 months later, a year later?
Very close to a year later.
Okay,
because we toured for a year on Until You Came Along.
Okay. So that's what you toured off the strength of just one record.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to play I'm in Danger. I'm sorry. I'm going to play I'm going to Stay, which is just an excellent falsetto sweet soul cut. And we will come back. So again, this is The Visitors with I'm going to Stay. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the City in the Park show. That was just The Visitors with their second record, I'm Gonna Stay. If you're just tuning in, I am interviewing Ray Foreman, member of The Visitors. So that record that we just played, it didn't really get much promotion, right?
That was during a time when that record came out, we were in the process of leaving Brunswick.
Okay.
So, I don't know if that had anything to do with the promotion. We got a lot of great feelers, but they just didn't put the promotion behind this record. I think it would have been a big record.
Why were you leaving? It just didn't get the promotion you wanted?
We just wasn't happy. We were on the same label with the Shy Lights, with Lost Generation, the Artistics, and we were the new guy on the totem pole.
Yeah, that's a story with a lot of Brunswick artists I talked to that weren't the big hit. They were like tax write-offs, mm-hmm. and the big artists were the ones that got the promotion. So, but it's too bad because they had a lot of talent, but they just didn't push. So that record came out, I think, in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're actually, which I don't have it here, but The Visitors have one more record as The Visitors on a label called Dispo, which is, I guess, Barry Dispenza's label.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that record's real rare. And first of all, if anyone out there in internet land or radio land can even make a recording of it, you know, I don't have even a recording of it to give to Ray. So it'd be cool if somebody out there contacts me and gets a recording of it. You'd be getting it to the original people that sang on the record. So what's the story? How did you actually get hooked up with Barry Dispenza and Dispo Records?
Well, I knew Barry from Brunswick.
Okay.
Barry was one of the staff writers at Brunswick.
Yeah, he is writing credits on Can I Change My Mind, mm-hmm. right? So you just knew him from there, and he's like, I got this label. Do you want to be on my label?
Well, it was all like one big family. We were all like family. I mean, when one guy was hungry, somebody went and bought lunch meat for everybody.
Okay.
I mean, these were the Chitlin' Circuit days for real.
Okay. So Barry offered to sign you to his label pretty much?
Well, what Barry said, he said, look, I can do what they're doing.
Okay.
He said, why don't you give my label a try? Well, I mean, how worse could it be? I mean, if a record takes off, a record takes off. Because at this period of time, we were coming into the point where we were getting ready to be managed by Joe Cobb,
okay.
who was a very popular radio personality on WBON at that time.
Yeah. So you were just like, let's try out this
yeah, I mean, why
Dispo
not?
Label. And then, so I heard you mentioned you actually cut a whole album worth of material for
mm-hmm.
Dispo.
Mm-hmm.
So what was on the album, pretty much? Was it mostly covers of stuff?
Yeah, we did a lot of remakes. But the biggest song, the greatest song on there to us was Little Golden Band.
Which was the single that actually was released, but it's very rare. I think it only exists as a promotional record.
I'm starting to believe that myself.
I've seen it, but I don't have it. And like, again, if anyone has it or even has a recording of it, you should get in contact with me. So that record, Little Golden Band, and I've seen the record, and actually it's written by Gene Chandler. He mm-hmm. has writing credit. So
that's
do
right.
you remember working with Gene?
Yeah, Gene's a good friend of mine.
Okay.
Well, we were together on Brunswick, actually.
Okay.
And he had been with Carl on OK.
Okay.
So Gene came to us and he said, look, I got a song for you. This song is a smash.
Okay.
And I think y'all the group to do it. I said, okay. So he gave us the song. And we went in and did the song. We did some covers on stuff like Rainy Night in Georgia and a few tunes from the OJs, Deeper in Love, and
okay.
stuff like that.
And you recorded it in Chicago. You
recorded, mm-hmm. recorded it in Chicago.
And you cut pretty much a whole album worth of material, but he never released the album. He's just in the can, pretty much.
Very much.
Okay.
Actually, it was a great album. And speaking of James and his last name, James, you need to send me. He's the only guy that has the copy of the whole album that won't send it to me. Oh, my God.
Wait, it's not James Price. Was that the name?
No. It's coming. James, I know why I'm not remembering your last name, because you haven't sent me that album. That's what it is.
Okay. So you cut that whole album. And then one thing that's interesting about that Dispo label is mm-hmm. I've seen the record too, and it's got a distributed an LA like address on it, which is mm-hmm. weird. Like, I don't know what the deal with that is either. And then another weird thing is, we were talking earlier, there was an LA Visitors, but you have no
right.
you have no connection to that.
None.
To that Visitors.
None.
So just kind of random. So pretty much mysteries that we will probably never
know.
Well,
one of the partners with that Dispo label was a guy named Gene Smith that had roots in LA.
Okay. So probably that's how they got an LA address on it.
But it seems as though he would have put it out on the L.A. Visitors.
So you cut that record, and pretty mm-hmm. much nothing happened.
Absolutely nothing happened.
And then, so did the lineup, I know you had one more lineup change.
Mm-hmm.
Did the lineup change happen for that record or after
yeah,
the record?
Yeah, on that record it was, we added, now I know his name, James Watkins.
Oh, okay. So James Watkins sings on the
Little Golden Band and that whole album.
And he sings on I'm Gonna Stay.
No, yes.
And then you had one more lineup change after that, right?
Yes.
So what's the story with that? Were you all living at the Y still?
No, we were. The Y was long gone.
Okay.
We had grown past the Y.
Okay.
We added a guy named Marcy, then Mel Britt.
Okay. So Mel Britt joined the group.
Yeah.
So, was he a fifth member, or did he replace somebody?
He was a fifth member.
Okay.
Because now we had a bass singer.
Okay.
We had never had a bass singer. That was unusual for us. We always thought that our harmony was good
so
enough.
So James Watkins sang bass.
Sang bass.
And then Mel Britt came on and added a fifth voice.
Mm-hmm.
What part did Mel sing?
Well, we wanted another lead singer.
Okay.
I mean, I was the tenor guy.
Okay.
Eugene Smiley was gone because we used to have you don't need two guys singing pretty sweet tenors.
Okay.
So we brought in Mel for that kind of OJ's tough kind of...
Because he had a deep voice.
Kind of that growl, you know.
So how did you know Mel, and where did you meet him? And
we actually met Mel because he was auditioning for Dispo.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he was auditioning to be like a solo artist or something?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Because the next thing we knew, we were talking, and he said, well, you know, I've always had a group. I've always been in a group. I said, well, that's probably why you... having a problem. You need to be in a group.
So Mel, is he from Chicago? Do you know where's he from?
Mel is from Anderson, Indiana.
Okay, so he came from Anderson, Indiana to mm-hmm. Chicago to record.
Excellent.
And he initially ended up auditioning and just joining your group because mm-hmm. you liked his voice and he needed a group.
We liked his voice and he liked our group.
Okay. So and you did you practice with him and he ended up picking up your
the only problem we ever had with Mel. Is that Mel was a great singer, but Mel was a terrible dancer.
Okay.
We were a dancing group.
Oh, okay.
So
you guys cut, well, actually, let's talk about that. So you guys actually had a lot of steps and moves and on stage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Who did the choreography for your group?
I did.
Okay. that's interesting. So Mel just wasn't as good in the shows because he couldn't dance.
What we would do is that the majority of the up-tempo songs, we would let Mel lead.
Okay.
And when it came to the soft stuff, I would do that because the steps were easier then. You know, it's slower, but the fast stuff, when we were really moving, that was not for Mel.
Okay. So you ended up cutting another record,
mm-hmm.
And the record was called The Girl in the Window, and the flip of that was called Life Walked Out.
Uh-huh.
So what's the story? How did you end up recording that record?
Well, actually, while we were still with Brunswick.
Okay.
A gentleman named Tony Lehner came to us.
Okay.
They were they owned a distributorship. And he said, well, we can do what Carl Nimmer is doing. We have a label now.
Okay.
Here we go with another label. So I said, well, they already have a distribution company. That would be a great marriage.
Okay. And were you managed by, you said you were managed by Joe Cobb?
Now, at this point, we're being managed by Joe Cobb.
Okay, so for this record, you recorded it, and it was supposed to be on the Twinight label, is that
exactly.
right? Exactly. And do you remember where you recorded this record?
Yeah, Universal Records. It used to be on Rush Street.
Do you remember when you recorded it?
It had to be, 70, 71?
Okay.
It had to be.
And so you cut this record called The Girl in the Window,
mm-hmm.
and... it was supposed to be on Twinight Records, and you said you never knew it came out. And then what actually happened is they released it, and they released it under, they changed the name of the group to The Mist, M-I-S-T,
yeah.
for the record. So you don't know what the deal is with that? You've never heard of The Mist?
I had never heard of The Mist until you told me about The Mist.
Okay.
The Mist were in The Mist.
Okay, so the record by The Mist is actually The Visitors,
mm-hmm.
and it's singing lead on both sides is Mel Britt, isn't
Mel
it?
Mel Britt.
Who was a member of The Visitors at the time, so I'll play...
Well, this was actually, when we did these records, we had got to the point where we wanted to show people that we could sing what I call standard jazz harmony. A little bit different, we were singing fifths and eighths, things like that for people that know music. It's different than just a standard R&B harmony.
Okay.
I just want to show people that we had another side.
So I'll play the record and we'll come back. This is The Mist, who are really The Visitors, with The Girl in the Window.
By closely, you
Okay, that was just The Visitors under the name The Mist with the girl in the window, and that record probably came out 70 or 71.
Yeah, about like that.
Yeah, and so first of all, it was on Twinite Records, but it really didn't get promoted or anything like that. Like, you didn't even know it was released. And I've always seen it as a promotional copy. Like, I don't know if the listeners know, but records got pressed as promotional copies, which came out on white labels, and then they got pressed with color labels, which are the things that were sold in the store. And I've never seen that record as a non-promotional copy, so they probably never pressed it as, like, a regular for-sale relief. But on the other side of that, I have a friend who swears he remembers hearing that song for 6 or 7 weeks in, I think he said the summer, so it might have been summer of 71.
And he very well could be right.
He says WVON played it for 6 or 7 weeks. I don't know if any listeners out there also remember that record, you should call up. But definitely either, whether they played it on the radio or not, they definitely didn't promote it and didn't really make it available in the store, so it couldn't have been a hit. And I know.
Not at all.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend about Twinite Records. Like, a lot of the things they did were kind of as favors for people. Like, they didn't really, you know, they might have pressed a record as a favor without really deciding to, you know, promote it or, so that ended up, you ended up, you know, on the wayside of the music industry again, where they didn't push your record. So, singing on that, again, you said you had a new member, Mel Britt, and that's another record where the other side of the record, which is called Life Walked Out, in the UK, that's the side that they're into, the up-tempo side, which I will play if we get a chance near the end of the interview, but there's more stuff that I want to talk about, too. So, one thing I wanted to talk about is you did some writing for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the songs you wrote was, you wrote for a local Chicago female group called Living Color.
I sure did.
So, and that was on a label called Mad Hatter. So, first of all, you wrote a song called Got a Strange Feeling, which, I'm trying to remember, the other side of the record was Thank the Lord for Love.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you had some connection to the group, Living Color, right?
Yeah.
So what was your connection to the group?
I was married to the lead singer.
Okay, so what was the name of the lead singer?
Her name was Bertha Coleman.
Okay. Do you remember the names of any of the other group members right now?
You really tested my memory.
Okay. Now. so maybe, yeah, if you think of them later, we'll mention
absolutely
them.
Will.
So, so what's the story? Like, it was your wife at the time, and was she singing in a group, or you decided to put a group together?
No, she was already singing. As a matter of fact, she was singing in a group when I met her.
Okay.
And how I met her is that the Visitors did a show at her high school.
Okay.
Actually, the high school was Cooley High.
Okay. That's cool. So, but all the group members are from Chicago, though?
Yes, they're all from Chicago.
Okay, and then, did you help her get the record deal, or what?
Well, actually, we knew some people that were looking for a girls group.
Okay.
And after we heard them sing, we said, well, wow.
Okay.
Here's a girls group. We'll introduce them and see what they want to do.
Okay.
And they loved the group, and they asked me to write a song right quick, and I did like a 30-minute song, and that was it.
Okay, so you wrote the record for the group, and you helped hook your wife. You were married to her at the time,
yeah.
And you helped hook her up with the record label.
Yes.
So she cut a record. The group Living Color cut a record called "Thank the Lord for Love" on this Mad Hatter label.
Mm-hmm.
So who ran that label?
Mark Davis, Benjamin Wright.
Okay, who both became much more famous later.
Yeah.
So Mark Davis became like a Motown writer later.
Yeah, he was a super Motown writer.
And Ben Wright became a much more famous arranger, and he's famous now too, right?
Yeah, he's still famous.
Like, didn't he do stuff for like Outkast and stuff?
Man, he did stuff for everybody.
Okay, so, but at the time that was their local Chicago label that they had.
They were all starting out.
And I think Living Color was one of two artists on the label. And you ended up writing the B-side of the record, Got a Strange Feeling, which I'll play. But the A-side of the record was called Thank the Lord for Love.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually got some play in Chicago, I think.
Yeah, it did.
And but both sides are good, so I'll play the B-side. This is Living Color with Got a Strange Feeling, written by Ray Foreman, who's up in here now. And if people have questions or comments, they can call up. The number is 773-702-8424. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the City in the Park show. If you're just tuning in, we have up in here Ray Foreman, a member of The Visitors, and that was just a record that he wrote by a group called Living Color, and that was called Got a Strange Feeling. And your wife, Bertha Coleman, was wife at the time, Bertha Coleman, was in the group, and you were saying that you just remember the first names of the other two mm-hmm. members. What were the first names of the other two members?
Bernice and Janet.
Okay. And Bertha passed away, right? She's no longer around. Yeah, it's too bad, because it'd be awesome to get more of the story of the group, because mm-hmm. it's a great record. And do you know if they ever went on to do anything else or record anything else?
Not that I know of.
Okay, so Bertha at least never cut any records.
No, not that I know of.
So, and that record actually got played in some play in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wrote for a lot of other people, right? So
yeah.
What are some of the things you wrote? I know you mentioned writing for Sidney Joe Qualls, is that right?
Yeah, we wrote a song for Sidney Joe Qualls called Bus Driver.
Okay.
We wrote for Jane Chandler.
So we is who you and...
Oh, me and my wife, Diane Womack.
Okay, and she's one of the Womacks, right?
Yes, she is.
So, and how long have you been married to her?
24 years.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, but you wrote the Got a Strange Feeling by yourself.
Yes.
And then you and Diane wrote, what song you wrote? Bus Driver for Sidney Joe Qualls.
Bus Driver for Sidney Joe
Qualls. That was one of his, like, Dakar records, is that right? I think he was
yeah.
Dakar at the time.
Yeah.
And then, I'm sorry, I cut you off while you were talking.
That's okay.
About it. Who were some of the other people you wrote
we
for?
We wrote for the Shallites. We wrote for Gene Chandler.
When did what did you write anything that was released on Gene?
What was the name of the doggone song? There's another one. I got to think about it.
When did it come out? In the 80s, 70s?
It came out in the 80s.
Okay.
Actually.
Did you write any other material that came out in the 70s, first of all, besides the Sidney Joe Qualls?
No, because in the 70s, we were still, after the Sidney Joe Qualls thing, we were still touring.
Okay.
And doing different stuff.
So actually, I have to ask about that, because we got to the last Visitors record as The Mist, but I never really asked how the group disbanded. Like, did you stay together for a while? Like, what happened?
Well, guys started getting frustrated. One guy went to jail.
Okay.
Daryl went back home.
Okay.
I was the only one that stayed in the business.
Okay.
I did a lot of things.
So how long were you together before everybody disbanded?
Wow. We started in latter part of 63, early 64, and we stayed together till about 74.
Okay. And I guess that's the story of a lot of groups around 74, 75, the kind of music industry in Chicago when the opportunities were disappearing and the clubs were closing down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you guys pretty much... For the few years after your final recording, you stayed together and mm-hmm. did shows, is that right?
We did shows. We did a lot of background work. We recorded on a hit song by Tyrone Davis.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about it in a second. So you did background work, mm-hmm. and then the group just eventually just kind of disbanded.
Yeah, kind of.
And you stayed in the industry. So let's talk about some of the background work you mm-hmm. did. So we mentioned this earlier, but one of the first records that you did background for was Betty Everett's There'll Come a Time. Is that the first recorded instance of background work that you're on?
No, I don't remember which one was first, whether it was Turn Back the Hands of Time for Tyrone Davis or There'll Come a Time by Betty Everett.
I think the Betty Everett came out first.
I think it was first.
I think the Davis was 70 and the Everett mm-hmm. was 69. So one thing that's interesting about this record is it kind of sounds like there's some female singers, but it's actually all male singers singing. Mm-hmm.
We sang very high.
Okay, and obviously this was a big hit in Chicago. So let me play the record and we could talk a little bit more. This is actually the song that sounds like female singers is actually, this sounds like male singers, but the Tyrone Davis sounds like girls singing on it. But I'll play the Betty Everett and then we could talk some more. So this is Betty Everett with There'll Come a Time, and this got released in 1969.
Yeah!
Okay, that was just Betty Everett with There'll Come a Time, and as we were just saying, the backing group on there is the Visitors. It's kind of funny, if you listen to it, it sounds like Until You Came Along,
with
Betty Everett kind of singing on top of it. So what's the story? How did you get hooked up with doing that session?
Well, we had just come back off a tour.
Okay.
And in those days, all the record company owners on Michigan Avenue knew each other. They were all good buddies. So Leo Austell called Brunswick and asked Carl Davis if we could come down and do background on the Betty Everett record, and he said, "Yeah."
Okay, and that was probably soon after Until You Came Along.
Yeah, it was. Wow.
So that's probably the biggest hit that you're on. Well, probably the Tyrone Davis is the biggest hit that you're on.
So then what
are some of, besides Tyrone Davis? If I could turn back the hands of time, what are some of the other artists that you did backing for?
God, it's so many. We did a lot of overdubbing on Shy Light stuff, on artistic stuff, on just everybody's stuff. I mean, we was the background group. A lot of Detroit stuff. We did a lot of Detroit Emerald stuff.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of the other artists or songs that you actually, specific songs you actually sang on?
With the Detroit Emeralds, I can't think of the name of the song. It was the biggest record they ever had. I can't think right offhand. It's been so long ago.
Okay.
I am getting older, folks.
did you say you were actually on Toby?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting that you're on that record.
Well, see, and those years in Brunswick, when anybody got ready to record, because we had a recording studio in Brunswick, and then we would go and master at Universal. So when it was time for somebody to record, whoever was in the studio, we just all helped out and jumped in.
And I guess I don't understand either, because I understand when they have a single artist and they put the backing group on it, but I understand when they have a vocal group, why would they put another vocal group on it?
Well, a lot of times you want to layer it, you want to make it sound bigger.
Okay.
Or you need somebody to sing, you got a group that sings in the middle or not real high, and then you need those tops to give it that balance. Actually, Motown did the same thing. They would do the four tops, and then they would bring in girls and put them on top of
it. Yeah, I know it was common with girls. It was just unusual for like a male group.
We were just high-singing guys. Sorry.
Okay. So one way they used you was to fill out the tie-in.
Yeah, yeah.
Although it's interesting with the Shy Lights, too, because they had Eugene who was saying hi already.
But he was just one guy.
Okay. So I'll play one more record that you guys did backing for. And this record is interesting because we were talking about a second ago that I always thought, and a lot of people always thought, it was girls singing on this Tyrone Davis, If I Could Turn Back the Hands of Time, but it's actually the Visitors.
Actually.
So it's all male singers singing
on
it?
No, there's one girl on there.
Okay.
Here we go. The girl was Barbara Acklin.
Okay. That's interesting. And then the rest of it was the Visitors.
Was the Visitors.
So this was, I guess, his second hit after Can I Change My Mind?
Yeah, it was.
So this is Tyrone Davis with If I Could Turn Back the Hands of Time.
About you, can't sleep at night, always thinking about you. But if I had the chance to start all over, I would be wishing today on a four-leaf clover, and leaving would be the last thing on my mind. If I could turn back the hands of time. Much longer, but the pain is getting deep. All the hurt keep getting stronger. But if I had just one more try, I would be all alone until the day I die, and we would have a love so divine. If I could turn back the hands of time. Remember, girl, that I love you. Mm-hmm. just realized without it I can't go on. Cause for you're the other half that makes my life complete. If I had one more chance, we'd have a love so sweet. And leaving would be the last thing on my mind if I could turn back the hands of time.
Okay, that was just Tyrone Davis with If I Could Turn Back the Hands of Time. Right now, if you're just tuning in the studio, I have Ray Foreman, member of The Visitors, who actually sang backup on the Tyrone Davis record. So I guess, first of all, thanks so much for coming down, and I'd like to talk about some of the things that you've done since, like, you stayed, first of all, you stayed involved in the music industry.
Yeah, stayed in the music business.
And I guess we talked about some of the backup stuff you've done, and you've done writing for a bunch of artists.
Oh, everybody.
So what else have you done in the music industry?
Well, I was a road manager forever.
Okay. Who did you do it for?
I was a road manager for the Shy Lights, the Stylistics, the Dramatics, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
And this was like, this was in the 70s and the 80s?
70s,
and the
80s, 90s.
Okay.
You know.
And what else have you done?
Well, I've, like you said, I've been a writer, a producer. I own a radio station now.
Okay, what's the story with that?
Well, actually, after how I got into the internet radio business was after we had an accident coming back from New York. I was with the Shy Lights, and Marshall's wife was killed.
Okay.
I came off the road in 99.
Okay.
And I had kind of lost my taste for the road there for a minute.
Okay.
You know, I've been in a few accidents over the years, but you just never get over them.
Yeah, that's a really dramatic, I mean, horrible event.
So when we got home, my wife said, we tried the 8-hour a day job.
Okay.
It wasn't working for us after 30 years in the music business.
So when you were a road manager and went touring, did your wife go with you?
Well, my wife was also an entertainer.
Okay.
So she was out there a lot.
Okay.
As much or more than me.
Okay.
Sometimes her tours went other ways. She would be overseas, I would be in the States, or I'd be overseas and she'd be in the States.
So your wife, as we noted before, is Diane Womack.
Mm-hmm.
Was she ever in a singing group, or she did a lot of backing work?
She did a lot of backing work. Matter of fact, she's one of the most famous background singers out of Chicago.
Okay.
She had a group long ago, but I didn't even know her then, so I have no information on the group.
So you actually don't. So she was in a group. Did they record? You don't know.
I have no idea. I don't think they did, but I know they all separated and they were all pretty successful. But actually, it was.
And her cousin is Bobby Womack.
Yeah, that's her first cousin.
Okay, and so she still does backing work. Is that right? And so you have this radio station you were talking about before. So you said you formed it in 99. Was that?
We actually formed a radio station. No, we came off the road.
Okay.
In 99, we formed the radio station in 2001.
Okay. And what's the story with the station? Like, what type of station is it? And you said it's an internet-only station?
It's an internet-only station. We play every format of music. It's called WGCR.FM.
Okay.
You don't need a www.
So any people can go there right now and listen to it. And you don't have, you play all kinds of music, you're saying?
Every format.
Are you actually a DJ on the radio too?
Yes, I am.
When are you on the radio?
I'm on the radio every day at 12:30.
Okay.
My name is on the radio is Ricky Romeo.
Okay.
So if you're looking for Ray, he's not going to be there.
Ricky Romeo. So people, you know, tune in if you want to call up Ray. Probably you can call up and, you know, because I'm sure there's maybe people in England or something that will listen and call up and talk to Ray. You got to listen for Ricky Romeo.
Oh, absolutely. And my wife is the lovely LV.
Okay, and can you repeat the address of the station again?
It's www.wgcr.fm.
Okay, so people should definitely check out
Ray's
station. And you were talking about how you have a lot of listeners now, and you've been on the air for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
So
we've been on air actually 8 years now.
Okay.
We're considered the number one station of our kind.
Okay.
On the internet.
Okay, what does of our kind mean? Just any internet station? Or?
Well, what that means when you say of your kind, we are one of the few radio stations that plays as many genres as we do.
Okay.
You know, most stations, you're either a blues station or an R&B station or a hip-hop station or a rap station.
Okay.
We play it all.
Okay, cool. Well, people should definitely check that out.
I appreciate it.
And just to note again, a couple other members of the Visitors did do things like we talked about how Eugene Smiley went back and cut a couple records with mm-hmm. Essence of Love. And I know Mel Britt cut at least one solo record. Mm-hmm. I think it's called She'll Come Running Back. And that's really collectible in England, too. So a bunch of stuff came out of
the
Visitors, which is interesting. So thanks so much for coming down.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's an interesting story.
My pleasure.
You know, across different cities. And so do you have any last words for the audience?
Wow, just keep listening to Bob and his great music, because there's not a lot of people doing it anymore.
Okay, well, thanks again.
Oh,
and
my pleasure.
We're going to go out with, first of all, if anyone has any questions for Ray, you can call it. The number is 773-702-8424. And we're going to go out with the flip of Until You Came Along. This is I'm in Danger.